Good evening. Did the president threaten a whistleblower who revealed his alleged shakedown of Ukraine's president? Hillary Clinton chimes in.
He has turned American diplomacy into a cheap extortion racket.
And Speaker Pelosi says Attorney General Barr is out of control.
I do think the Attorney General has gone rogue.
With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Friday, September 27th, 2019. The chairman of the House Foreign Affairs, Intelligence, and Oversight Committees of the House of Representatives have subpoenaed Secretary of State Mike Pompeo over his failure to produce documents related to Ukraine. Representatives Adam Schiff, Elliot Engel, and Elijah Cummings informed the top U.S. diplomat in a separate letter. They've scheduled depositions for five State Department officials mentioned in the inquiry. The request is for six categories of documents, quote, related to reported efforts by President Trump and his associates to improperly pressure the Ukrainian government to assist the president's bid for re-election. Pompeo has not publicly addressed the State Department's role in Rudy Giuliani's dealings with Ukraine. And the White House has confirmed a key detail from the unidentified CIA officer who has accused President Donald Trump of abusing the power of his office. The New York Times on Thursday revealed some details about the whistleblower, including his role in the intelligence community. The CIA has declined comment. The White House acknowledged that a record of the Trump phone call that is now at the center of the House impeachment inquiry had been sealed away in a highly classified system at the direction of Trump's National Security Council lawyers. Nancy Pelosi's announcement that an impeachment investigation of Trump is now underway has pushed the White House into full defensive mode, even as some Democrats question the strategic judgment behind the impeachment move. But Hillary Clinton, who was defeated by Trump in 2016, was supportive of the House Speaker.
We all know that she has just announced the opening of an impeachment inquiry into the president on the basis of evidence that he betrayed his oath of office to uphold the Constitution and protect and defend our country. He has turned American diplomacy into a cheap extortion racket. He has denigrated, and let's be honest, stabbed in the back, the career Foreign Service officers who serve bravely and selflessly, no matter the politics of the administration that they are working under. And now they are caught in the crossfire. I was proud to serve with Foreign Service officers and civil servants at the State Department, and I know firsthand that they deserve the support and gratitude of all Americans. Now, sadly, we've known who Donald Trump is for some time now. We knew he was a corrupt businessman who cheated people. We knew that he and his campaign invited foreign adversaries to tamper with our elections. And now we know that in the course of his duties as president, he's endangered us all by putting his personal and political interests ahead of the interests of the American people. But this is ultimately about much more than Donald Trump. It is about us. It is about who we are as a nation. History is being written, and the world and our children are watching.
Separately, Trump advisor Kellyanne, Trump had been recorded speaking to State Department officials this week, likening the whistleblower, who is protected under federal law, as a spy and seeming to threaten the person with treason charges punishable by death.
But basically, that person never saw the report, never saw the call, meaning never saw the call, heard something and decided that he or she, whoever the hell it is, sort of like almost a spy. I want to know who's the person that gave the whistleblower, who's the person that gave the whistleblower the information, because that's close to a spy. You know what we used to do in the old days when we were smart, right? The spies and treason. Right? We used to handle it a little differently than we do now.
Separately, Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway told reporters that the whistleblower has protection under the law, something Trump himself had appeared to question earlier in the day. He suggested then that his accuser isn't a whistleblower at all. Conway spoke with reporters at the White House.
The president is always concerned when people are possibly leaking information that they shouldn't, if it's based, if it includes national security or sensitive or highly classified information. Early on in our time here, as you probably recall, his calls with the leaders of Mexico and Australia leaked, and then his conversation with the Russian ambassador and someone else from that embassy, I believe, leaked.
Kellyanne, does the president believe that this whistleblower is a legitimate whistleblower under the statute and therefore entitled to protection under the law, or does he believe that he has the ability unilaterally to name this person publicly?
Well, that's an either-or question that's a silly
Does the president believe that this whistleblower is entitled to whistleblower protections under the law?
Well, the whistleblower is protected. But what exactly qualifies a person as a whistleblower under the statute in your reading of the statute?
The question is, what's in your reading of the statute?
No, it sounds like you haven't read the statute, which is not a good look. Well, don't come here asking me, who reads things all day long, to answer questions about things you haven't read.
Kellyanne, I'm asking
now,
you if the president
I know you're calling the person
whistleblower,
but it's actually beside the
law.
Point.
Is he entitled to protection
what
under
matters,
the law?
What matters is the person has protection under the law.
Can the president release the whistleblower's name if he wants to?
He hasn't done that.
Can he do it if he wants
to? I have no idea who the whistleblower is, and I don't want to know.
Can the president release the name if he wants to?
Nobody's even discussing that name, and what we're talking about is we now have an impeachment inquiry based on nothing, and you all should care about that. All of you who give the nonstop platform to Adam Schiff in an oxymoron-like fashion as chairman of the Intelligence Committee, who lied for years in your papers, on your Twitter feeds, on your news stations, in your TV shows, lied that there's a, quote, mountain of evidence of collusion. This is worse than Watergate. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Said that the day before the Mueller report came out, practically. And that was a big lie. That is why the 9 Republicans who served with him on the Intelligence Committee asked him to step down. They lost complete faith in him. Not because they're partisans, but because he lied. So now he's lying again. If he thought there was enough in the actual call transcript, the actual call that occurred between the Ukrainian and American presidents, if he thought there was enough there, he wouldn't have to concoct an entire version in his own head. But that's how he gets on TV. And you allow him. And shame on that.
And Speaker Pelosi said Trump's veiled threats are aimed at intimidation and may have tragic consequences.
I think what the president said goes beyond irresponsible. It's dangerous. Whistleblowers have an important role to play in unfolding revealing wrongdoing in our government. If their complaint has been deemed by the Inspector General as credible and also of urgent concern and therefore sent to the Director of National Intelligence, the law says this, the Director must send it to Congress. The White House intervened, the executive branch intervened and held him back from doing that. I feel sad for him because he's a respected professional. But for the president to say what he said about those who may have supplied information to the whistleblower seriously undermines integrity in government. But the president does that almost every day.
Trump had been reportedly, the White House and the Justice Department learned about a CIA officer's concerns about President Donald Trump around the time the individual filed the whistleblower complaint. Media outlets then published identifying information about the whistleblower and have come under criticism from members of the whistleblower's legal team. One of the whistleblower's attorneys, Mark Zaid, said publishing details about the individual places the person in a dangerous situation, personally and professionally. Whistleblowers are a key element in ensuring oversight of public and private organizations. Since Trump came to power, whistleblower groups have been seeing a noticeable uptick in people seeking help in leaking information about wrongdoing. Kyla Bennett is a former EPA whistleblower who works with New England PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. She says while the laws may differ in some respects, all whistleblowers are protected, even if they're wrong.
It depends on what kind of federal employee you are. And basically, I work only with environmental whistleblowers, so people at EPA and Department of Interior and NOAA and all of the agencies that deal with the environment. So clearly what is going on in Washington doesn't have anything to do with the environment, but sometimes the environmental laws have provisions within them that afford whistleblower protection. But there is a general Whistleblower Protection Act for all federal employees.
There's some issue here with defining what a whistleblower is.
A whistleblower is somebody who comes forward with information that indicates that they believe that a law is being violated, a rule or regulation is being violated, or there's some kind of gross mismanagement, a waste of funds, an abuse of authority, or some kind of substantial or specific danger to public health and safety.
Can you be wrong if you're a whistleblower and make up something? Or
hopefully people don't make things up, but all the Whistleblower Protection Act requires is that an employee reasonably believe evidence. So in other words, it doesn't actually have to be true, but they have to reasonably believe that it is true. So they can be wrong and still be protected under the Whistleblower Protection Act.
What happens if there's retaliation? Obviously, the reason we have a Protection Act is because throughout history, people have been retaliated against for being whistleblowers. What are they protected from?
They're protected from any kind of retaliation, firing, demotion, suspension, poor performance evaluations. We've had clients who the offices will turn the temperature down to 50 degrees in midwinter or force them to go on site visits that are 100 miles away. Things that just make their lives uncomfortable and miserable. So it can really run a whole gamut of actions.
How about if your boss starts talking in front of you or so you can hear it about how in the old days we used to take care of spies that way?
Oh, yeah. certainly that could be considered a threat, a veiled threat. It's not appropriate, simply not appropriate for that to happen.
What's the difference between a whistleblower and a witness in the sense of if you're a witness in a court case and somebody intimidates you, that's like a serious crime. How come whistleblowers aren't as protected as, let's say, a witness in a crime?
It's really unfortunate, isn't it? Because whistleblowers, as evidenced by what just happened, they don't have to have personally witnessed something. So they can see documents. They can have someone else tell them something. It can be all sorts of things. They don't have to be, have seen it with their own eyes or heard it with their own ears. And whistleblowers throughout the ages have been, you're really a pariah. I was a whistleblower at EPA, and it's not a comfortable place to be. People don't want to talk to you. They keep things from you. They talk behind your back. It's really not a pleasant place to be. People who are whistleblowers do so only as a last resort. Over the past 20 years of me working with whistleblowers, I have never come across an employee who becomes a whistleblower because they think they're going to get fame or glory or press or money. They all do it as a last resort because they feel like they have no other choice. Whistleblowers are, generally speaking, heroes. They're courageous and they are putting everything on the line. They're putting on their jobs on the line, their health, and in some cases even their lives.
Have you had situations where there were credible threats on the lives of whistleblowers?
Oh yes.
How do we protect whistleblowers? How does your organization, PEERD, go about protecting these people when they come forward?
When they come to us, we try to figure out a way to out the underlying issue without outing the whistleblower. Because often it's, agencies will go into a kill the messenger type of mode. What you're seeing right now with President Trump, kill the messenger. That doesn't take care of the problem, but we want to try to avoid that. So oftentimes when someone comes to us with some kind of complaint of, mismanagement or a violation of a law or regulation, we try to figure out how we can get that into the light of day so that that underlying issue can be taken care of and the employee can continue to work at the agency without having to leave or be outed. It's only, again, whistleblowing, when we actually file a whistleblower complaint, it's usually absolutely the last resort.
The implication is that if this whistleblower today that we're talking about who led to the impeachment of the president went so far as to make a complaint, that it must be pretty serious in their mind.
There's no doubt in my mind that whoever this person is who came forward, it did so as a last resort and because he or she felt that there was no other choice and they were trying to save the country.
How can the public be supportive of a whistleblower in your experience?
They have to understand how difficult this is for whistleblowers and to have some kind of gratitude for them. You know, I'm seeing stuff on social media where people are bad-mouthing this person and saying, oh, they didn't see it firsthand. They didn't hear these conversations. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Obviously, this person had enough knowledge to make a credible complaint. And if it was taken credibly by the Inspector General, who is a Trump appointee, you better believe that they had enough evidence and that it was serious enough that this person deserves our gratitude and respect, no matter what happens.
The president made some statements about NOAA, the Weather Bureau, basically, where he said that the Weather Bureau people had lied about the weather and that, in fact, the storm was going to hit Alabama like he said. Did your organization get any of that at all, or were there any whistleblowers involved in that? And is that have you ever had that kind
people.
Of intimidation of the Weather Bureau before?
No. That's a first for us, is having the Weather Service being, being dealt with in that way. I mean, this administration has an M.O. of slamming science and being, saying that anything scientific is wrong or a hoax or whatever. So both the science and the scientists are being defamed, really. And that's what happened with the National Weather Service and Hurricane Dorian. I mean, that was science. It was not going to hit Alabama. The president didn't want to be embarrassed, so he used his Sharpie and made the agency retract the statement to a certain extent. We have not seen that before. It's just, it's beyond, I mean, every day, I think it can't get worse. And it does. It does every day.
Very good. Thank you very much. Have you been busier than average in the last 3 years?
I can't tell you how busy we are. It's been, my phone doesn't stop ringing night or day. It's awful. It's awful. We're trying to, tread water and keep our heads above water and try to give some kind of hope to the employees who work in these environmental agencies. But I got to tell you, they're losing hope rapidly.
Kyla Bennett is a former EPA whistleblower who works with New England PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. And the Green New Deal, a set of principles for addressing the climate crisis in the U.S., has become a rallying cry for the Democratic base ever since progressive firebrand Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez introduced it in February. While some worry the Green New Deal could be a political liability for Democrats, attracting conservative Republicans who have ridiculed and lied about it, there's a new polling that suggests that the idea does well in swing districts Democrats flipped in the 2018 midterms. Progressive think tank Data for Progress and YouGov recently surveyed 1,033 voters in 42 swing House districts across the country. Their poll found 49% of voters supported the Green New Deal, even after being told it would include a large amount of government spending. The poll found 36% of voters oppose it. Activist and writer Victor Wallace says it's time to go beyond the Green New Deal, though.
I'm the author of Red Green Revolution, The Politics and Technology of Eco-Socialism, and also of a more recent book called Democracy Denied, 5 Lectures on U.S. Politics.
The Green New Deal, is that what you mean when you say a socialist or eco-socialist alternative, or is it something different?
Eco-socialism goes beyond what the Green New Deal is usually thought of as including, although actually the Green Party does say that its Green New Deal is an eco-socialist one. So it's up for discussion.
How do you define it?
It combines the idea of ecology and the idea of socialism. The socialism aspect, as I see it, involves removing the class division in the society, which, in other words, goes well beyond the idea of a New Deal-type arrangement such as Bernie Sanders offers. So socialism is eliminating of class difference, and ecology is restoring as much as possible a sound environment in which the species can interact and in which there's not the constant breakdown. And I understand that some of the destruction has already been set in motion in ways that can't be stopped, but there are aspects that can be reversed or slowed down. So we have to fight for that. And the socialist aspect would allow us to fight for the ecological goals in a purposeful way, where our decisions about what to produce and how to produce and by whom and how much are not made on the basis of trying to maximize sales, but instead are made on the basis of what's healthy.
Trump just today, speaking at the United Nations, specifically denounced socialism. He likened it to Venezuela, where he said without any substantiation that millions had died. And, you know, in general, under socialism in the 20th century. And in line of that, and the fact that he is president of the United States, what's the reality of getting this implemented?
Trump is hardly a credible person to think of in these connections. It's true that tens of thousands of people have died in Venezuela, but it's because of the U.S. sanctions, not because of socialism. To the extent that they were implementing socialism before that, they were improving the lives of countless people with health care and guaranteed food supplies and so on and so forth. But the fact that he's the president of the United States, obviously, I think at best we can take it as a learning moment. In other words, that we have such an outrageous example of all the opposite of what needs to be done, because it's not only attacking socialism, but he's attacking the environment. He destroyed the Environmental Protection Agency. He's going full blast into the pristine wilderness areas and so on and forth. In other words, he's demonstrating in himself the fact that the destruction of the environment and the hyper-implementation of capitalism are absolutely go hand in hand. So it's, in a way, it's a confirmation of the idea that in order to address the environmental issue, we have to get away as far away from that kind of practice as possible.
Where do we go from here? Is there anybody on the horizon you see is to get behind, or is that yet to be determined?
The real issue is to get behind ourselves. In other words, to get ourselves, all of us, many, many, many of us, into action around these issues. I mean, what's necessary, regardless of who comes to the top in the political scramble, what's necessary is a vibrant popular movement that is well-informed about what's necessary and that can push for what's necessary. And that will be more important than anything else, I think.
Environmental activist and writer Victor Wallace. And finally, when President Donald Trump wanted Ukrainian authorities to investigate his Democratic rival Joe Biden, Rudy Giuliani turned to a pair of Soviet-born business partners from Florida who made more than $500,000 in political donations to Republicans while facing lawsuits from disgruntled investors over unpaid debts. Documents show Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman used wire transfers from a company they controlled to make a $325,000 donation to a Trump-allied political action committee in 2018. That was on top of $100,000 in earlier donations to Trump and GOP candidates that helped the relatively unknown entrepreneurs quickly gain access to the highest levels of the Republican Party, including face-to-face meetings with the president at the White House and Mar-a-Lago. Thank you, President Trump, making America great, Parnas wrote in a May 2018 Facebook post showing him and Fruman with Trump at a dinner in the president's private residence at the White House. The big May 2018 donation to American First Action was part of a flurry of political spending tied to Parnas and Fruman, with at least $478,000 in donations flowing to GOP campaigns and PACs in little more than 2 months. It's not yet clear when the two men first met Giuliani, President Trump's personal attorney. But earlier this year, according to Ukrainian media reports, Parnas and Fruman were spotted in Kyiv, where they were frequent visitors to then-prosecutor General Yuri Lutsenko, who sought to portray himself as an uncompromising fighter against corruption. Multiple Ukrainian media outlets later named Parnas and Fruman as helping arrange a January meeting in New York between Lutsenko and Giuliani, as well as other meetings with key government officials. Giuliani's efforts to launch a Ukrainian corruption probe into the Biden and his son's dealings with the Ukrainian energy company, a request later echoed by Trump in a July 25th call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, are at the heart of burgeoning congressional impeachment inquiries. A whistleblower complaint by an unnamed intelligence official released this week makes reference to associates of Giuliani in Ukraine who are attempting to make contact with Zelensky's team, though it's not clear that refers to Parnas and Fruman. That could put the two men squarely in the middle of the investigation into Giuliani's activities. Fruman did not provide comment to AP. this week. This is Associated Press report. Parnas, in an interview with the Miami Herald on Thursday, called the impeachment inquiry a soap opera and defended Trump. He said the Ukrainian government has access to information on alleged wrongdoing by the Bidens, but that the U.S. government proved indifferent to receiving it through official channels. Thanks to his friendship with Giuliani, Parnas said he and Furman became the best people to get into the Trump administration's hands. I got certain information and I thought it was my duty to hand it over, Parnas told the Herald, adding that the former New York City mayor was his lawyer as well as a friend. There has been no evidence yet made public that either the former vice president or his son violated the law. Parnas, 47, came to the U.S. from Russia as a young child, while Fruman, 53, made his way to Miami from Belarus following the fall of the Iron Curtain. Corporate filings and court records show several lawsuits involving the men, including detailed allegations of fraud against Parnas that led to a hefty civil judgment against him that remains unpaid. Campaign finance watchdogs first raised concerns about the source of the $325,000 donation to America First Action, a political action committee supporting Trump's reelection, shortly after it was first disclosed last year. The May 2018 donation, among the largest the committee received that quarter, was reported to have been made by Global Energy Producers, LCC. Other campaign finance disclosures list Parnas as the CEO of the company and Fruman as president. But there's little public evidence that Global Energy Producers was ever a thriving enterprise that could generate the income to account for its outsized political giving. The company has no listed office address or phone number, no announced deals or contracts, and a bare-bones one-page website that features only a countdown clock that long ago ticked down to zeros. Details of the source of the funds only emerged earlier this year as part of a long-running unrelated lawsuit involving the estate of a Navy veteran from New York who accused Parnas of defrauding him out of nearly $500,000 in loans and investment in a Hollywood movie project that turned out to be a mirage. Those records and deed filings in Florida reviewed by the Associated Press show the money for the $325,000 donation to the Trump PAC on May 17, 2018 came from the same corporate entity that 2 days earlier received the proceeds from a $3 million private mortgage. That loan was secured by a luxury high-rise condo unit in North Miami Beach, owned by a separate corporation tied to Fruman. More than half of the proceeds from the $3 million loan appear to have been used to pay off a prior bank mortgage on Fruman's condo, with the remaining $1.2 million wired from a Miami lawyer's trust account to a corporate entity controlled by Parnas called Aaron Investments One. Wire transfer records show $325,000 was then wired from Aaron Investments One to America First Action, the Trump PAC. And that's some of the news for Friday, September 27th, 2019. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo, and I'll be joining you doing the news tomorrow at 6 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-sponsored radio in New York City.